All right, I've got a bonus episode because I'm not quite ready to release where I'm going with the podcast. So I happen to be here in Phoenix, Arizona. Aaron Elliott and I are teaching our Sleep Level 1 implementation program for dental sleep medicine. And we're holding it at the Dental Success Institute Training Center in Scottsdale, owned by Dr. Mark Costas. And I figured while I've got him, let's go ahead and do an interview with Mark, because he's been gracious enough to have me on his podcast a few times, but I haven't returned the favor. And we had a great conversation, and I got to be honest, which you guys know I'm pretty much always overly honest. We all have biases in what we believe people stand for and what we believe they're after, and what we have, you know, conjectures about what their motives are. And I've always liked Mark, and he's always been good to me, but I've never really known Mark, and I've always had some of these made up biases about who he is. And man, I gotta admit, I was totally wrong. The guy is smart. The guy is certainly open about his successes and open about his failures. But to me, how I measure someone is when we're off the record, and he was so transparent with me about his businesses and where he's been and what he's at, what he's trying to achieve. And, you know, I was equally as transparent with him. And I have a different respect for him. So, Mark, if you listen to this, I got to tell you, I meant it when I said, I got your phone number. I'm going to bother you a little bit. I want to learn more about what you're doing and how I can learn from that. And I hope we become good friends and take it from there. So I think you're going to love the interview. As normal with me, ADD, we kind of went all over the place a little bit, but all honestly very good content. So enjoy my conversation with Dr. Mark Costas of the Dental Success Network. All right, gang, unbelievable honor and pleasure to have Mark Costas here with us today, Dr. Mark Costas. Mark, I want to probably not talk dentistry with you a little bit.
Hey, all right. My favorite non-topic.
You know, and really what I want to talk about is one of the things that I believe that I haven't told very well, or I think many of us don't tell very well as speakers and educators, mm-hmm. is that some of our life choices that we've made, or some of the things we're able to afford in life, mm-hmm. Is because we've diversified and don't simply have a single income.
Sure.
You know, and certainly, I mean, I don't know much about your personal life in terms of your spending habits and things like that, but I assume you have some of the nicer things in life.
Yeah.
You know,
my house isn't as big as yours. I've seen it online.
But I got three incomes, okay? You know, and I tell people this when they're there, you know, and I'm not a big fan of showing the house and stuff because, number one, it's a little over the top, but I tell people, listen, I'm very fortunate. I got three incomes. I got mine, my wife's, and my side hustle.
Yeah.
And you know, my wife's income helps. It's not as good as mine, and I just mentally have to say that to make myself feel good. And then my side hustle doesn't quite equal my practice net at this point, but it will soon.
Sure.
But it started with just me. You know, for the first 10 years of my career, it was just a single income. And but some of the things we've achieved in the last 5 years, a lot of that is due to having multiple streams of income.
Sure.
So we can talk about so much with you, okay? And maybe we can kind of throw some of these things in there, but let's talk about the true entrepreneurial dentist, okay? Hey, I'm doing great in my practice. I can grow it. It's not as exciting for me anymore. But you're probably a big believer in having a side hustle.
Yeah. So my first business out of undergrad was a taco truck. Was a catering truck.
You're not Mexican, dude.
I'm not, but I employed Mexicans.
Okay.
Yeah, 3 years it took me to get in.
What year was this?
This was, 1997.
So this is before, like, food trucks were a big deal.
Oh, they were not a big deal.
Yeah.
In fact, they were very...
So you probably went to construction sites and sold $1 tacos.
That's exactly what I did. Yeah, exactly. I bought a taco truck because I was trying to get into dental school. I got into the executive MBA program, but that was at night.
Okay.
So I had to support myself some way. I didn't want to, you know, work my way up the corporate ladder if I eventually was going to get into dental school. So I bought my own business, and that's where I learned the art of entrepreneurship.
The art of hustle.
The art of hustle, man.
Yeah.
And you're so right. It was French fries and carne asada burritos and Diet Cokes and Marlboro Reds and black coffee.
Yeah.
That's how I put myself through graduate school.
You know, but I think what's important there, and I think sometimes we have to even think about, you know, I always look at all these past experiences in my life, you know, and I'll talk a little bit about some of my side hustles. I've been in the side hustle since ninth grade, okay, and so I can walk through all of this, right?
Yeah.
But what I heard there was a lot of great things, besides the learning and all of that stuff that he created for you. But you had a very succinct menu, mm-hmm. okay? You kind of knew what your customers wanted,
yeah.
okay? And you served your market. And the same thing goes to our dental practices. You know, when you're starting something foundationally, the simpler you can keep it, the better it is, right? Yeah. You know, it's like when I meet dentists, or especially when I get young associates with me, they're like, oh, I want to do partials and dentures. This patient needs that. I'm like, dude, we don't do that here.
Yeah.
And they're looking at me, that's revenue you're throwing away. I'm like, listen, we got a business model here. Our business model is we don't sell fajitas off our taco truck, correct?
Mm-hmm.
You could, okay?
Could've.
But and you shouldn't. Okay, not at the stage of the business that you were in, right? And so simplicity, that's what I heard in that, right? You know, I'm going to make the cigarettes there, all, you know, maybe some cerveza, things like that, if you had the license for that. But good. How'd that serve you? How do you look back and see, like, the taco truck in your current businesses?
Oh, God, it taught me everything, man. Yeah. I mean,
What's everything?
It taught me how to manage payroll.
Yeah.
It taught me that the owner is always the last to get paid, always.
Yeah.
Taught me how to, you know, it taught me how to be able to accept a no or to keep on going after a no, because I would have to go to foremen at construction sites. If you want a freaking tough crowd,
yeah.
sell to foremen at construction
sites. You almost got to scratch their back a little bit,
oh
right?
Oh my gosh, it is.
And they want you to come at certain times because they don't want the people coming down from what they're doing. You know, they're like, our break time is this.
Yep, that's right.
You know?
That's right. And you think about the typical construction worker. Those guys do not mess around.
No.
It's like, tell me how you can help me, if not, get the hell out of my
face. Yeah, and how fast can you deliver it for me?
That's right. And how fast, how cheap, and, you know, how consistent can you be? Yeah, it taught me a lot. It taught me about marketing, taught me how to manage employees, taught me how to hire, fire, taught me how to manage overhead.
Yeah.
All of those things that you need to run a dental practice, because business is business.
Yeah, business is easy. It's, you bring in X, you spend less than X,
that's right?
Right. You know, so that's some, and I always tell people at the root of it, but one thing that I would think as well is scalability is totally dependent on others.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can only run that taco truck if you were doing it yourself so much. Your growth is limited by yourself, right?
Absolutely.
So scalability in that world is all based on leading and growing people around you.
It's so true.
And it's no different than dental practice.
Yeah, it's so true. But what I think, what I have to point out that's different between dentistry and a taco truck is that I can hire any number of people off the street that could cook burritos.
Right.
Right? At a relatively low price point. But boy, it is tough dealing with associates, as you know.
Yeah.
Finding the right ones, finding ones you can trust, finding ones that aren't going to, you know, alienate your
what you built.
Alienate your patient base, you know, be a good representative of you. That's difficult. That's why, you know, this multiple practice game that so many of us are in is a tough,
that's why I'm not in it, to be quite honest with you. I laugh at people like you, not that, because you're smarter business wise than me, okay, because the end product is much greater for you than it is for me, you know, from a scalability perspective. But for me, man, I figured out what for me, because what I found in associates was they thought my practice was their residency.
Mm-hmm.
And I was absolutely not going to have that because I had everything to lose in that. You know, listen, I mean, and you can think about your situation. You have 7 or 8 practices now?
I have 7. We've gotten up to 15.
Right. So you know, I've got all in at this point probably $3 million invested into my practice between real estate and all that other, you know, on, you know, the technology and all this stuff.
Sure, yeah.
You know, it takes one person to come in and start screwing things up and doing bad dentistry on people. And, and you know, so, and I think associates haven't seen that. And every good DSO or mature DSO will tell you that they're what holds them back from growing is not money at this point. It's the doctors. It's associates. It's not team members. It's all associates.
It's so true. And you alluded to this, and that is, you know, take $1 million practice. Say $1.3 million practice. That's $1 million asset.
Right.
Okay. It's a 1 or 2 doc practice, and I've seen this happen before. It's a one or two dog practice. You are one sexual harassment claim away from having a $1 million asset go to zero. And that can happen.
Well, one divorce.
But that can happen overnight.
Overnight,
literally bad press. Yeah. And that practice goes from $1 million in net worth to $0.
Or one hunter that you hire that goes to Africa and shoots
happens
a lion.
To shoot a really cute lion. Then,
you know.
That's all it takes.
So so those are some of the challenges with it. And I've decided that I don't want any part of that, right? And so I respect those of you guys that want that.
It ain't easy.
No, of course. People, but all right, since you brought this topic up, okay.
Yeah, sure.
So let me be a little bit anti-Mark here, okay?
Please.
Not anti against you, but anti against, anyway. So my point is, do you think we're misleading young dentists to think that multiple practice ownership is sexier and easier and more lucrative than it is?
Yeah, I will take that on. Because I do believe, you know, I've been doing the podcast for 4 years now.
Yeah.
It was April 6th of 2015. I just looked it up the other day. April 6th, 2015, multiple practice ownership. I was really big about telling my story, how I had six practices right out of the gate, and it didn't work out well, and I sold them and readjusted, but now I built it back up to 10, and the whole story, right?
Right.
And wrote my book. Talked about that stuff.
Pillars of Practice?
The Pillars of Dental Success.
Yeah, that was a great book, by the way.
Thank you.
I bought that before I even knew you.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. There's a lot.
You owe me $2. I'm sure that's all you got off Amazon for that, you know?
That's true. But there's so many similarities in my background, the immigrant story and all that stuff. But yeah, I mean, I think that a lot of people heard my story, younger dentists at the time, and they were romanticized by this idea of having 8, 10, 12, 15 practices. And I was maybe responsible for glamorizing it a little bit too much. I'll tell you this, and I'm always the first to point out the lapses in judgment and any misrepresentation that I have been responsible for in the past. I don't think it's the best way necessarily, you know. And I'm really, really open in my podcast about, hey, look, I was all about trying to get to a certain number of practices. This last year and a half, I've been shedding my underperforming practices, my underperforming assets, and merging some of them. And now I realize, and this is just an evolution of me, and now I realize that the number of practices does not matter. It's gross revenue and profit that's actually really important. You know, you look at somebody like Craig Spodak over there in Miami, and that dude does $10 million under one roof, right? And then you look at somebody like me, I'm doing $12
million. And eight roofs,
Seven roofs, with seven times the overhead, you know?
Yeah.
So I'll be totally honest with you, it's not about it's not about the number of practices that's important. It's about the profitability.
You know, I don't want you, listen, we're friends, so I don't want you to think I'm saying you have misled. I just think I'm seeing more and more young dentists that I talk to, in their mind, they're like, I want to be a multiple practice owner. And my bias, my own limiting belief is, man, I don't even know how that's right for you.
Yeah.
You know, and to me, to come out of dental school, and unless they've been in business and done the taco truck or done things before, I almost want to say, man, so you're being misled a little bit. You know, I say, just do it once first, right?
Yeah, so that's a really good point. That's my bit of advice now. Okay, start with one practice. Don't even stick directly focused on one practice. Yeah. And here's what you want. You want less than 55% overhead.
Mm-hmm.
You want 20% growth per year. You want to be completely systemized. You want to be able to plug another dentist.
You want
to
McDonald'ize it.
Yeah, yeah. You want to be able to plug another dentist.
Chick-fil-A
in
it.
Chick-fil-A it. And walk away and potentially maintain the profitability of that practice. Once you can do that, if you still have the will, then go buy another one.
Yeah, and I would argue that you got to do it for more than 1 or 2 years.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because we can all be successful for 1 or 2 years. I can get a few dates, you know, a couple of times, but to find a wife is hard, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And to keep one is, especially when you're me, you know. So, I love hearing you say that because, and I would argue, listen, I've romanticized about, man, if I could just start over again, I would do it so differently. And my dad said to me once, and this is where my practice, I call it my practice pivot, but my practice transformation started was, when he said to me, why can't you just do it where you're at? You know, and he said, just restart your practice within your practice. And he said, just pick a day. You know, my Friday was my day off. And he said, make your Friday your perfect day. You know, and then Friday became my perfect day. Then I said, all right, I'll make Thursday my perfect day. You know, and then I said, okay, I'll make Wednesday afternoon my perfect afternoon. And before you know it, I had a couple of days of my quote unquote perfect days, and then we're ready for an associate. And then that's, you know, when I got through that understanding of what it looks like to have an associate, and I got clear in myself, things really changed for me. Not economically, yes, okay, but more about this, what you talked about, being able to walk away. Like I counted up, I missed 16 weeks of work last year. You know, I was gone from my practice for 16 weeks. You know, and 8 of those were scheduled. Okay, so my goal is to take 8 to 10 weeks of vacation.
And we still grew.
And we still grew. Yeah. You know, as I was sharing with you and I've shared on my podcast, we didn't grow. 2018, in my opinion, was a bad year for me. But that's because I have high expectations of myself. But, you know, it was, I think Spodak's model is easier than the multi-DSO model. And I'm sure Craig would be like, hey, you're not, it's not what it's cracked up to be and everything. But I think the multi-doctor, multi-specialty model is a more achievable model for more people than multiple offices.
It's a heck of a lot easier to manage, for one.
Well, you're in one place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I have 2 practices in California.
Yeah.
One of them is killing it.
Yeah.
Like, killing it. The gross revenue at that practice is greater than 2 of my other practices.
Combined, yeah.
Combined, right?
Right.
But it's so difficult to manage the damn thing because it's in a different state. I have to, if there's a fire,
it costs you a day to go there and come back.
I have to fly. I have to drive 2 hours because I'm 2 hours from the airport.
Okay.
I have to drive 2 hours to the airport, get in the plane.
That's a day and a half.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. Which I've considered actually buying an airplane just to manage my stupid practices in California.
Yeah.
And you know, it's like.
Then there's also the bandwidth issue, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's interesting. I see the parallel in an experiment my dad did. So we are now at 8 or 9 hotels, mm-hmm. cockroach places, whatever you want to call them. And we don't own all of them 100%, but we're in partnership with several of them.
Sure.
But he bought one, we're in North Carolina, and he bought one in Columbus, Ohio.
Okay.
It was a bad decision, you know, and it wasn't because it wasn't a good property. He's like, we're doing revenue-wise fine. There's no profitability there. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, why isn't there profitability? He's like, I'm not there. You know, I'm not there to look at it, right? I'm not there to look at it day to day. Are people stealing money? He's like, I'm sure they are.
Yeah.
You know, and not, you know, maliciously, but things happen, right?
Sure.
And So, all right.
If I walked into that practice, 80% of the team wouldn't know who I was.
Yeah, that's good and bad, though, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's true.
You could do the undercover boss pretty easily there, right? Yeah.
I could.
So what other side hustles have you done? Okay, so you did the taco truck.
Yeah.
That was probably more necessity than anything else. But there's a spirit inside of you that could see that and predict the future.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, when I had the first 6 practices, I realized that my facilities were underutilized or unutilized after 5 o'clock and on the weekends.
Yeah.
So I created this dental assisting school curriculum. I don't know if you knew about
that. Horizon?
Yep.
Yeah.
Created a dental assisting school curriculum, and I just opened one school
out
of one of my practices. And it did really, really well. Yeah. We charged $3,000. In 9 years, I've never raised the tuition.
Yeah, you don't need to. I mean, your market won't sustain it.
That's right. That's
right.
We're a lower socioeconomic.
Yeah.
The girls in the area either go to trade school or junior college.
Right.
And I'm one of the trade schools in the area. So, you know, we get.
And you're still running that?
Yeah. So we started with that one location.
Mm-hmm.
And people started taking notice, and then people started asking if they could buy the schools from me. So we have 200 locations now.
So it's a franchise model?
It's a license model. So they pay me monthly.
A royalty model of some sort?
Yeah,
okay,
they
good.
Pay me monthly, not royalty. They pay me a flat fee every month.
A membership, let's call it. Yep. Okay, good for you.
And so that was kind of how I started in this.
And that's in perpetuity, basically, right?
Yeah, if they want to continue the school, they just pay me $200 a month.
Yeah.
And I don't need to look at their books. I don't need to, if they kill it.
How do you know if they've stopped?
What's that?
Do you even know if they stopped doing it and stop? You know, they say, oh, I'm closing the school, and then don't close it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's happened before.
Yeah.
I don't even bother.
But yeah, it's.
If people are going to be dishonest, it is what it is. That's
people are going to be dishonest, too.
Yeah,
I mean, that's
true. And
reality.
People have literally bought the thing for $15,000 and sent it back and saying, I'm not going to use this.
Yeah.
And the thing's in different order. They photocopied the damn thing.
Right.
I'm not even going to worry about
it.
It doesn't bother me. So that was how I got into the quote-unquote influencer spaces.
Okay.
I was speaking on stages about the dental assisting school thing, and that kind of got played out, and people started hearing my story about, you know, the 6 practices right off the bat, and they started asking me to speak about dental practice management.
Business.
Yeah. And then that spun into my consulting company, and that's where we're at now. So my other side hustle is the consulting company, which is...
So let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Is that your passion?
I love it. That's what I love more than anything else.
Why do you love that so much?
I don't know. I love interacting with people, for one. I've probably made every mistake in the book as far as practice management, as far as financial decisions, relationships, being a terrible boss. And I just really feel passionate about spreading the news about kind of the mistakes I've made and helping people avoid those mistakes. There's no formal education for dentists in business.
Yeah.
And I've seen a lot of
people. It's on the job training.
It really is, and a lot of people just don't have time to do the training on the job. And I just really, really love taking somebody, being that third eye, that outside perspective.
Now you're talking Indian stuff here, man. Okay.
Yeah. I love being that outside perspective and saying, simple. There's five things. If you fix them, you're gonna.
What are those five things?
Systemization is the biggest thing ever. Right, okay. Making sure that you're a systems-driven practice instead of a staff-dependent practice. Mm-hmm. So, my first six practices were all staff-dependent practices. Yeah. I would stress if I lost one person. A back
things fell apart
lead,
then.
A front
right?
office lead, everything would fall apart because everything was in their head. Right. So that's the biggest thing.
That's my practice, by the way.
Is it really? It's scary, man. Yeah. And I remember when I lost my first really good hygienist, and it just—I mean, for 3 months the practice took. Like a really serious decline.
Hygiene didn't suffer. Your diagnosis and case acceptance suffered.
Case acceptance suffered. Yeah. Revenue suffered. Mm-hmm. I mean, those sorts of things. And that was because I was completely dependent on her and not the systems that we built around her. That's a big one.
So let me, if you don't mind.
No, please.
So you're going to go through five things. I want to talk about that.
Five-ish.
Five. Yeah, but I definitely want to get to those.
Yeah.
All right, so now I'm asking selfishly. No. Okay. All right, so... I've never been a systems guy. I've been driven enough to push people to get it the way I wanted it.
Okay.
Okay, so the challenge for me now is, all right, how do I take a practice that's been this way for 15 years, 16 years, have great people, and what would be my first step to systemize my practice?
Well, the good news is you're already systemized.
I just don't know it, right?
You just don't know it. Yeah. I mean, the systems are there. They're just not written down anywhere, probably.
Okay.
They're probably not referred to anywhere. If you lose somebody, you might have a clunkier onboarding onboarding period of time to get them up to.
Oh, it's running. It's very clunky.
It's clunky.
I'm very dependent on hiring unbelievably great people.
Right.
Okay, because that can pick it up and do it fast.
So, but you already have systems in place. You're a seasoned office. You guys are super successful. You grow every single year. So there is a way of doing things.
Mine is 2008, 2009, 2010, but yeah.
Which is funny because I have some of my practices are Medicaid practices, and the recession was some of the best times for my group.
I bet.
Yeah.
I bet. So how do I go? So what would you say to me? So systemize is having people write down what they do?
Yeah, part of it. Yeah, I mean, I'm huge about time journals.
Okay.
So for the doctors, we have them write down from the moment they wake up in the morning till the minute that they go to sleep at night, they write down exactly what they're doing every single hour, right? And then we take a highlighter.
So if I have to go to the bathroom, I write that down?
Oh, yeah. Write it all down, man. Write it all down. You're spending 3.5 hours in the bathroom, dude.
Dude,
what's going
listen,
on?
Listen, my wife jokes. Like, sometimes I come home, and this is my problem. I'm ADD, okay? But my wife, I come home, and I'm like, I got to use the bathroom. She's like, all right, see you in 40 minutes. You know?
That's when you catch up with all your social
dude,
media,
dude, that's
right?
I have a magazine rack in my bathroom because that's what I do my reading.
I love it.
You know?
What was the question?
About systemizing, have people write it down, the time journal.
Yeah, time journal is really, really big. So we have them write down exactly what their protocols are. Write down exactly how you check in a patient. Write down exactly how you do an e-claim, how you batch at the end of the day. Whatever it happens to be, you just write. Mm-hmm. They write their own job description. They write their own protocols. Yeah. That's all it is. Once you have that, then you have... an official onboarding process when somebody that needs to replace them comes in.
I just had an idea of how we can make this easier.
Okay.
I just hire a videographer.
We do that
one day,
too.
Follow you around, and turn it into a video book. And then move to the next team member and stuff like that.
That is an extremely efficient way of doing it. We have the girls follow each other around with the iPhones.
And yeah, I just hire a videographer to do it.
There you go. Done. You are now a systems-driven dental practice. Yeah.
That's interesting. So systems is what I'm hearing from you, because this is maybe my misconception of overthinking this, okay? Systems isn't necessarily about the perfect way of doing things. Systemization is about being able to onboard a new team member quickly and efficiently into your business model.
Yeah, that. And if you have, say your team writes down protocol of the perfect way to do something, mm-hmm. right? So it's easier to talk about back office as an example, right? Here's a picture of your burr block. Yeah. Here's a picture of the endo setup. Here's a picture of the implant setup. This is exactly what we wanted to
look like. So something as simple as that. That's systemization. Dude, I'm thinking like way crazy. I'm thinking like Toyota assembly line stuff, Kaizen and whatever those words are,
Six Sigma, all that stuff. Not necessary. But I will tell you, I mean, that helps you to keep them, hold them accountable. Mm-hmm. So if they have authorship in their own systemization for their mm-hmm. job, for their position, their role, in the company, and they consistently screw up that burr block, or they consistently
then there's no excuse
to put the rheostat in a certain position. Yeah. They consistently forget to wipe off the overhead light. Those are little things that'll drive you absolutely nuts, and you seem like a jerk because you've asked them three times throughout the week, but it's not written down anywhere. So now you have something to point to that says, "Hey, man, you signed your accountability agreement. You said that you were going to write this thing and then follow it."
I want our listeners. So what I heard Mark just talk about is called accountability, which most dentists hate, and they do too late. Okay, right. Hate and late. Yeah. I want everybody to read or Google search a thing called the accountability dial, and it's a 5-step process about making mention and how to hold people accountable. And a lot of it's based on nipping in the bud, basically early on. So it's called the accountability dial. I'll do a podcast on it in my own words at some point in time.
I gotta read that one.
Yeah,
that
it's good. It's good. It's good. It's good. And all right. So that's systemization. So that's one of the five. What's number two?
Can I go back to accountability?
Yeah, I'm here for whatever you want, man.
So the accountability piece. So when people are talking about, I have to develop this leadership muscle. Mm-hmm. I have to become a better leader.
Have to be a parent.
Exactly. The buzzword is you've got to be systemized. You've got to be a good leader. Mm-hmm. You have to watch. You have to be a bit of a CFO. A bit of a CEO, a bit of a COO.
You know, I don't think any dental practice, most single doctor dental practices don't need a CEO.
Oh, no.
I mean, it's just a fancy way of selling people shit.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. It's absolutely true. But think about this whole concept, this fuzzy concept of leadership. It's like, you know, most people think, well, I have to be a good public speaker for sure. I have to be charismatic. I have to light up the room. The energy must rise when I walk into the room.
No.
That's not what it's all about. It's being able to persuade people to do what you want them to do and to hold them accountable if they're not doing it. Yeah. That's all that it is. That's all leadership is.
You know, I use a different word than leadership when I'm trying to describe it to people. I say leadership is really communication. You know, it's all about how you communicate with people. Treat people like family. Treat them like friends. You know, don't get necessarily too close or too far away, but just, you know, treat them like your kids a little bit, right? And not in the part of being a kid, but, you know, when my kids do something bad, I say, listen, hey, that wasn't right, you know? And so just tell your team members, hey, make mention of it, you know, when it first happens. But leadership is communication, right?
Absolutely.
You know, I say leadership, and most people, when I talk about leadership in the practice, most people immediately think about leading team members, and I think of leadership also as with patients. You know, how do you lead your patients to make choices? And how do you lead your patients to choose or say yes to the best in dentistry? So leadership is, in fact, I argue that the CE that dentists need to take straight out of school is leadership. And the problem is very little of it exists in the dental world.
That's true.
And leadership's more about words. Words matter. Words are everything. And marketing and team accountability and patient communication, words are everything. It's you know, and for me, they're simple principles. Get permission, give people a choice, and hold them accountable. You know, tell them the risks and benefits and all of those things.
Yeah, so, John Maxwell, who's probably one of the best.
The one-minute manager, or the one,
21 irrefutable laws of leadership. He's a really excellent speaker, but I always remember his definition. He says, leadership is influence.
Yeah.
Nothing more, nothing less. And influence is bringing value to people's lives. So when you're talking about communication, how much value can you bring to not just the patient base, but to your team as
well? Oh, yeah, massive. I think it's massive value.
Oh, if you're bringing them value every single day, yeah, and you're cultivating those relationships every single day, then you're being a strong leader.
Look, I can tell you for the most part, this year's a little, again, the last 6 months have been really tough on our family, but I can tell you my team members, who their husbands are, their kids' names. I can tell you what drives them. I can tell you, are they money focused? Are they time focused? Are they, you know, trying to just be a part of something better? You know, they don't necessarily care so much about money. It's not the decision maker for them. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's part of leadership to me, because the words I would use with you would be very different than the words I would use with someone else,
sure,
right? Because I got to understand what motivates you. It's like when somebody comes to me and says, I can show you how to make more money. I'm like, dude, that doesn't, yeah, I'd love that, but that doesn't move me.
Yeah.
What moves me is show me how, you can sell me the same product by saying, I can show you how to take more time off.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be like, all right, I'm interested in hearing that.
Yeah.
You know, so when I get invited to talk to sales teams and stuff like that, I talk to them about understanding the season of life that your client or the dentist in this case are in, and that's what you lead with. You got to understand and recognize where they're at in their career and what's important to them.
Sure.
And so, all right, so we got five things. So number one is
now you're putting me on the spot. I'm thinking about leadership and nothing else. Yeah. So yeah, overhead and cash flow control,
okay,
having a basic understanding,
yeah,
of business. I talk to dental schools all the time. In fact, last night I did.
You're in Vegas, right?
I was in Vegas at UNLV.
Yeah.
It was a fly-in at 5, fly-out at 9.
Yeah.
It was pretty awesome, though. Those kids are very, very engaged. A lot of fans of the podcast. So I always like that a little,
yeah,
bit better than when I walk in cold to a school and they're like, "Who the hell are you?"
Yeah.
The one person that knows me is the person that invited me.
Of course,
right? But it wasn't that way at UNLV. And but yeah, I mean, it's so important to have just a basic understanding of business. You talked about the taco truck and why that was valuable. It was valuable because I mean, it is so simple, right? It's like revenue minus expenses,
yeah,
equals profit,
yeah,
right? But there's so many little nuances, mm-hmm, to that formula that people don't understand. They don't understand, adjusted production.
Mm-hmm.
They don't understand
Payroll taxes and quarterly estimates,
yeah,
and so you don't get that surprise at the end of the month.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Or at the end of the quarter, you know?
Just the basics of business.
Yeah.
Can't read a P&L, can't read a balance sheet, don't know the difference between profit and don't know the difference between profit and revenue. You just have to understand how to calculate overhead and what overhead means, what expenses mean to the business, how you can control those expenses and that overhead and that profitability.
Mm-hmm.
It's either by ramping up production or decreasing costs. A little bit of both and you're in good shape. But so many dentists just don't understand the basics of business. They don't understand business cycle. And it's not their fault. We're never taught this.
Yeah.
That's something
But that's not an excuse to me, Mark. You know, I think we live in the, you know, I'm unwilling to accept the excuse that we weren't taught in dental school. There's a lot of shit I wasn't taught in dental school, okay? But we live in the world of Google and YouTube, you know, and books and audio books. And that's just a lack of willingness to get out there and learn. You know,
so many resources,
yeah,
more so than ever when we were,
yeah,
coming up.
Yeah, of course, you know.
I mean, there's
67, yeah, people,
dental podcasts, for goodness sake.
You know, like, more than that, actually. But, you know, it's like when people say to me, and I'm sure that people have said this to you, is, well, I didn't get to grow up in a business family or in a business environment, and that's why you're able to do what you do. I'm like, no, man. You know, I grew up in the motel business. Like, we counted toilet paper and bed sheets, okay? You know, there's some fundamental business principles there that have certainly affected my life. But at the end of the day, I've spent a lot of time learning. And by the way, I was in the motel business through my family in the 80s. Nothing we do today is like the 80s. Not one thing,
mm-hmm,
you know? And so it is a constant learning process of relearning modern business, you know? And we were servicing prostitutes and hookers at our first motel, you know? So, I mean, you know, none of that applies to my dental practice.
They were providing a service.
Yes, and we were renting by the hour, you know? We were serving our market, you,
yeah,
know?
Well,
and so I want to, if you don't mind, I want to play another contrarian perspective.
Please,
on
I
this.
Love these. I love these.
Yeah, and it's not a right or wrong,
yeah,
you know?
Sure.
It's just, I've always been a big believer when people start talking profit and loss and overhead,
mm-hmm,
that to me, the fix is not savings, the fix is revenue.
Mm-hmm.
And I see too many people, and I don't know how to get them to understand the value of a rep,
mm-hmm,
the value of a distributor and the value of buying a more seasoned and proven technology. Mm-hmm. It bothers me when people try to say, oh, I saved 10 cents or even, let's not even say 10 cents. Let's say I saved $1,000 by buying this on Amazon or eBay or whatever it is. Some of that stuff bothers me a little bit.
Yeah, I get it. Okay, I love this question.
Yeah.
And I get this a lot. And I talk about this a lot because some of the conferences that I speak at, it's the same narrative that you just you spoke about. You know, I've spoken at different conferences from different large distributors.
Right, of course.
From the largest distributors in the world.
Yeah.
There's three of them, and I've spoken on stages.
And they're all in a class action lawsuit. But
yeah, that's right. Everybody that was in that class action lawsuit, I've spoken on behalf of that.
Yeah, exactly.
Stuff. Okay, so here's what I say about that. I have this unique perspective because I've had the privilege of being able to look behind the curtains at the books of hundreds, if not thousands, of dental practices over the last decade. And I've seen people make some really, really basic mistakes when it comes to expenditures. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about lab fees that are 12-14% when they should be probably under 9.
Mm-hmm.
Dental supplies that are 13-15% when they should be under 5. So we're talking about, I have a client that has a $4 million.
That's stupidity.
Well, that's exactly what I'm talking about. There's a huge percentage of dentists out there that never look at those line items on their P&L. I'm talking about basic business awareness. There's two ways, like you said, to fix an overhead problem.
Mm-hmm.
One is decreasing costs. The other one is ramping up revenue.
Yeah.
I am not opposed to either one of them, but there's a general business awareness. Mm-hmm. If you're paying 15% for dental supplies,
that's stupidity.
That is a significant amount. But what I see happening is that people that hear people like you talk or people like the reps, they're like, well, they said, and they're totally right, I should control my overhead by ramping up revenue. Mm-hmm. And they never look at their
As long as you're not out of line by more than a point or two. I'm okay with a point
or
two.
But that's a huge assumption that that you're...
Yeah, but I assume people are looking at basic numbers.
That's right, and people aren't. I'm telling you, man.
Well, they have these dental CPAs that should be telling them, but they charge you an arm and a leg. I have an unbelievable story about that. But
I want to hear it.
Yeah.
But the average overhead...
I just got a letter from the IRS that I didn't file my taxes for 2014 and 2015 when I hired a very large dental CPA firm and paid them a lot of money to do this for me.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
That's scary. So
yeah.
What happens?
Well, we'll find out.
Holy shit.
We're going to find out because I can tell you this. I've got them. You know, I've got the copies of them. I don't know. We'll find out. I mean, I don't know. Is it me, them? I mean, I don't know.
Oh my God.
You know, did we pay my estimates on time? Because they were doing the e-payments for me. You know, I mean, but the lesson for me in that was that's my fault. Ultimately, that's my life and success on the line. Yeah. I can't be outsourcing it and forgetting. It's okay to outsource things, but it's not okay to outsource and forget about it.
Yeah,
that is stupidity. And that's my own stupidity in that situation. But one of the things I'm big on is when somebody says dental behind it, yes, it should cost more, sure, that's fine, but then deliver the service.
Dental tax,
deliver the service.
So that what you're talking about is the difference between delegation and abdication.
Right.
And a lot of us abdicate.
It's taxes, they make it so easy to abdicate that.
Right? Holy cow. So what I'm getting at, and I hear exactly where you're coming from, and I'm not opposed to revenue, I'm not opposed to technology, that does increase overhead, but not if you can justify it. If you're getting if you can get a 10-to-1 ROI on a piece of technology, man, dude, that's a piece of math that I agree with all day long.
Yeah.
What I think people misunderstand my message sometimes, and they think that, well, I can't buy the CBCT because it's going to add another $1,200 to my debt payments every month, or I can't buy the CEREC machine because it's $100,000, and Mark says that you have to watch your overhead. That's not what I'm saying at all.
Yeah.
If you could justify that with ROI all day long. What I'm saying is you have to be responsible enough to be able to look at the basics of your business and say, okay, I'm spending within line here and not here. And when you're saying to delegate that or abdicate that out to a CPA, I believe that you have to be able to take a look at your books yourself and say,
no,
I'm auditing this and I'm way out of line here.
You know, what you just said reminds me of something that I hold people accountable for clinically.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, You can't buy any technology and say, well, my team knows how to do it and I don't know how to do it. Because that's abdication, as you just said. That would never fly for me or anybody I'm teaching or training. But I did that in my CPA life, you know, and that's not fair. And I understand how to read a profit and loss statement for the most part. But yeah, that's shame on me for that. I mean, that's my fault. And hopefully it's just a mistake. It's just a mistake.
Moment, yeah, every time I get something from the IRS, I'm like, oh man.
Yeah, well, I get one of those like weekly. So, all right. So let me clarify the message a little bit.
Okay.
So what I hear Mark Costa saying is, there are industry norms, acceptable ranges, and if we're plus or minus a couple of points, that's okay. But when we're out of line, it's an area that needs to be fixed. I don't disagree with that at all. But for me, my concern is, let's say I keep my supplies at 6%. It's a little bit north of that, okay? I'm not gonna fight to make it 4%. It's just that doesn't make sense to me. Now, when I hear 12, 13% on supplies, 100%. There's something needs to be done about that, because that's just, you're getting ripped off is essentially what, or you're just making bad business decisions there. But to me, it's better to use your bandwidth to grow than it is to use your bandwidth to save a little bit.
Right.
You know,
I agree with you on that point completely. And I will say that I've seen this happen where people, you know, they're at 8% of dental supplies and it should be 5. We're like, hey, you got 3% there on the line. That's $3,000 extra month you're overspending. See if you can get your assistant that's ordering to stay under this number.
Yeah.
Very, very easy to fix. They get down to 5% and they're like, you know what? I love the feeling of this. I'm going to get to 3.
Yeah.
And then they spend unnecessary amount of time trying to drop another 2% when they're already there, man. Now that's the time when we're going to work on marketing. That's the time when we're going to
top line revenue.
Right, redeploy our bandwidth to focus on increasing the revenue. When I say you got to watch your overhead, people get this weird idea that I'm anti-revenue. It's like, no, man, I'm pro profit. How are we going to get the profit? Then do it.
You know, I call it the wording I use with people is I go. And this is assuming we're within line, okay? Like, to me, within line is plus or minus 2 points, okay?
Yeah.
You know, 1, 2, 3 points, not a big deal to me in my mindset.
Unless you're 3 points over in 6 different categories, which then you're 18%.
Yeah, of course, right? I mean, there's, yes, right. Yes, okay? But even then, you can only save so fast, okay? I mean, you can only say, it can only make so much of a dent. Okay. Exactly. If you're a practice that's doing $500,000 a year, okay, you're probably spending, that practice is probably spending $40,000 to $50,000 in supplies. For me to cut 3% off of that that's gonna make it's gonna make not a big difference for me. Okay. So to me it's all relative to the unique situation that each of us are in.
Yeah.
But anyway, my point is we should be focused in two phases of our career or our practice. And one is the growth phase. Okay, where our bandwidth is focused on top line, okay? And then if we reach that plateau, or if we're looking for more profit and the growth doesn't exist, or we don't have the wherewithal to create that growth, and we're not willing to invest in outside marketing, technology, people to grow that, then we get into what I call optimization phase. And that's where I start focusing more cleanly on the expenses to start driving increase in bottom line. And so to me, I'm still in growth phase 18 years in. I leave 5 to 6 points on the table overall. I'm positive of it, you know. So it adds up. It's a lot of money.
It does, and I support that. I support that in growth phase. We talk about that all the time in our group. It's like growth phase versus sustaining phase versus retirement phase. I mean, there's a lot of different phases. And, if you have a startup or a brand new acquisition, if it's 4.5% that we're going to, that is the industry norm or what we're comfortable seeing for marketing, shoot, it might be 7 points higher than that.
You know, I think I want to bring up one more point on this.
Okay.
So I don't disagree with you at all about the being way out of line. Something's got to be taken care of that. Mm-hmm. I think what has happened is we've devalued the rep. And I think the rep has allowed them to become devalued. Now, let me ask you this, okay? Would you pay $20,000 to $30,000 more in supplies if your rep brought you an associate every year for your practices?
$20,000 to $30,000 more in supplies if they brought me an associate.
Or two in your situation, multiple practices.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right? So to me, the question there is the value of a rep. Okay. So to me, I think what's happening, and I'm trying to speak to reps because I speak to, you know, with my connections manufacturingly, I try to speak to reps and I'm like, dude, listen, if you want to avoid some of this pricing pressure, listen, the margins that you had, those days are gone.
Yeah.
And bottom line, I mean, it's gone.
Especially now.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, they're gone, right? I mean, just like companies saw when Walmart was growing, their profits got deleted, and now they see Amazon, they deleted even more. So those days are gone, okay? That margin's never coming back, okay? So to me, the way to keep business is you got to deliver the value. And part of that from the dentist side of things is you got to expect and hold accountable your reps. You know, I have a rep, and one of the areas that I'm big on is dental implants, okay? Start with the rep, and if they don't maintain your business, they don't earn the right to keep your business, then switch to whatever XYZ brand you have. But I tell my implant rep, listen, I'm never going to call you to order. My expectation is you show up here, you decide if it's every week, if I have enough volume, every month, I don't care. Just make sure I have what I need and make sure that my implant percentage stays at this and you can have my business. Okay, bring me new products, help me do consumer marketing, help me do educational programs, and I'll pay your juice. You know, and I tell my distributor rep the same thing. You know, help me find good team members, help me find good people, and I'll pay a little bit of the juice. I'm willing to pay the juice for good reps, but if they don't provide me any value, then I don't see any reason to pay the juice.
This comes back to one of your original points, mm-hmm. and that's with communication.
Yeah.
The reason why you're successful in that particular relationship is because you've clearly defined your expectations. Yeah. You say, this is what I expect from you. I expect for you to make sure that I don't run out of shit.
Yeah.
I want it to come within this price range.
Yeah.
I'm willing to pay a little bit more if you do these five things.
Yeah.
You're very crystal clear about your expectations and you held them accountable. That is the mark of a successful relationship.
Yeah.
And you nailed it. And if you can do that in every aspect of your life, especially in the leadership role with your dental team, if you're super crystal clear about your expectations and you say, here's what I expect, this is what success looks like, I'm gonna check with you once a week, and if we're getting to the left or right of my expectations that you agreed to, then we're gonna have a discussion. That is what leadership is. That's exactly what leadership is. So I do see, back to your point about the reps, I do see the value in reps, and they have their fingers on the pulse of the entire market.
Well, then pick the right one is what I tell people.
Right.
If you're not getting what you need, find another one.
Right.
I mean,
just
I have,
like anything else, right?
If you're not getting what you need from an assistant, get another one.
That's right.
You know, train and try to recreate behavior. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I'll say one this thing, because I want to ask you a couple of last questions here. Okay. Is, yes, I set expectations, but the flip side to that is I'm willing to ask them, are my expectations unreasonable or out of line? Please speak now or forever hold your peace.
Sure, sure.
Right? You know, and I'm willing to have them say, I don't know if I can do that. Mm-hmm. Okay, or that sounds unique, or this and that, and then we can have a discussion around that.
Or even if they agreed to it initially, and then once they tried to implement, it was a little bit much for them. I have a lot of respect for people that say, hey man, time out for a second.
Yeah.
I know I agreed to this originally, but this is harder than I thought it was going to be. Can we kind of adjust
to it and work
up to it?
Yeah.
I totally respect that, but yeah.
So my point in all of this is don't overpay, okay? But understand that you're paying a juice, expect value in return. Mm-hmm. And some of that value isn't lowest price. You know, it's other values, right?
It
help grow practice though. All right, so listen, I know you got to go. I'm going to actually release this today, I think.
All right.
So I got to trim the first 30 seconds off. But how can people, let's say I love what you say, and I love 95% of what you say, okay?
I reserve the extra 5% for myself.
Well, yeah, listen, it's bad to agree with somebody 100%.
I
tell people that about me, they're like, I love everything you do. I'm like, dude, that's a problem. You're going to be stalking me pretty soon. You know, and I said, what's wrong with you? Can you talk to my wife? You know, if people love what Mark Costas is saying and it fits your boat, what's the next step to work with you? I mean, how can I get more Mark Costas?
Oh, gosh. Does anybody really need
Yeah, of course.
Mark
Listen, I, from what we've talked about and what you've shared with me, and by the way, I got to tell you something. It was very refreshing of how transparent you've been with me off air about some of different business things, and hopefully I've been that way in return.
Absolutely.
You know, and our profession needs more transparency, a lot more transparency. So thank you so much for that.
Thank you.
So all right, how do I get more? What's the best way to start work with? I don't want to go all in on Mark Costas. I want to get a little bit. I want to test you out. I want to go on a date with you.
Yeah. Okay. Let's date.
Yeah.
First of all, if you haven't patched into the podcast, it's a 5-day a week podcast. It's
called. You do it 5 days a week?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Yeah. Holy smokes.
Yep. The Dentalpreneur Podcast on iTunes. Yeah. You guys know how to find podcasts.
Yeah.
So the Dentalpreneur Podcast on iTunes. That's a great way to kind of listen to what my views are. Yeah. We have great guests on there like T-Bone and Aaron and really, really smart people. So try that.
Hopefully
first.
Smarter people than us. But yeah.
And, you know, I have a vibrant Facebook group, Dental Success Institute Facebook group. And it's funny because, you know, we've talked about these Facebook groups and
self-made experts.
The personalities behind a lot of these Facebook groups and these gigantic inflated Facebook groups, 15, 20. Mine's just over 5,000 people, but it's super
5,000 engaged people.
Super engaged, and you know, they're all invited. The vast majority of them are dentists, and we have real positive conversations. It's not a poop show out there like some of these other places where you post a case and people just slaughter you for 3 days. Not that. So that's another fun way to get in touch with me. And then you can just email me, info@truedentalsuccess.com.
I got one more for you.
Okay.
Okay. I think you underprice your success summit.
Okay.
Okay. And I think for $500-$600, to me, that's almost free way of getting into Mark's head for, what is it, 2 days?
Yeah, 16 hours. The Dental Success Summit is coming up March 28th and 29th, right here in Scottsdale.
$500-$600?
Right now we are at $500 right
no,
now.
No, dollars to come in.
$500. Yeah.
That's free in my book, dude, for 2 days of a world-class speaker and a person that has a lot of information, whether they love it or not. I mean, it's a lot of good, solid information. I would encourage everybody to do that. Yeah, you can get you on Facebook but in your podcast, but you're not going to get the essence of who Mark is. Show up for the Dental Success Summit. You know, I might show up. If I got to plan it out. I want you to give me a date for the fall, and I'll make that one so I can put it on my calendar now.
Sure,
so,
I appreciate
that. What else you got for me? That's it?
That's it, buddy. That's it. This has been great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, man. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Wait, by the way, for everybody out there, are you still recording?
Yeah.
Yeah, me and T-Bone are sitting in a storage
closet. Oh, yeah. I forgot to tell people. We're literally like this.
We got boxes stacked up over his head right now, and we're sitting here in a dark room. In a closet.
I think they think we're the help around here, by the way. Thank you so much, Mark. You're awesome, dude.
Thank you, brother.